And most of the people really don't know that so many of great products, Bitcoin products and Bitcoin companies are coming from Prague. And I would say that the reason is historical, because we were under the communism oppression for a long time, and pretty much even before, Czechs were always fighting for freedom, and we were fighting really hard, using whichever tools gave us some bigger power, because we are a small nation, we never had really a chance to fight fair fight. So we need to find always some tools which will give us a special advantage. Yeah.
Hello, I am Cody Allingham, and this is the Transformation of Value podcast. In this episode, I talk with Matyáš Kuhajer, co-founder of BTC Prague in the Czech Republic, Europe's largest Bitcoin conference. We talk about BTC Prague's origin, Matyáš's connection to New Zealand. We also discuss the Bitcoin scene more broadly in the Czech Republic, with a number of well-known Bitcoin companies and projects emerging from the country. Now, I will be attending BTC Prague 2024 in June, which is going to be awesome. There are some great speakers lined up, including Adam Back, Michael Saylor, Parker Lewis, Peter Todd, and many others. If you are considering coming to BTC Prague, please use the discount code TTOV to get 10% off your tickets. Reach out if you would like to catch up over there. My email is always open, hello@thetransformationofvalue.com. Otherwise, onto the show. Matyáš, how are you?
I'm good. It's a nice weather here in Czech Republic, so I'm very pleased to see that the spring is coming finally.
I know, we're actually just here in Japan, we've got the sakura full bloom right now, so it's very beautiful. Sort of a changing season, a changing time of life, a good time to reflect on what's to come. It also aligns with the financial year, so it's a good time to look at taxes and all of those other worldly issues that we have. But I'm excited. BTC Prague, I've booked my tickets. I'll be over in Europe, June 13th to 15th this year. It's very exciting. Tell me about it, man. Like, what's your background to starting what could possibly be called Europe's biggest, most exciting Bitcoin conference, arguably? Well, how did it all happen, Matyáš?
Well, the story is quite long, and it can be told longer and shorter. So I'll probably start, because you are from New Zealand. So I'll probably start with something what might relate to you.
Okay.
And the story actually started in 2011 when I was in Wellington. I used to work there, but at this time I was looking for a job, and I spent most of that time just going around the city and looking for a job, giving my CV around to every single restaurant. And actually behind the library, there was the Occupy Wellington movement.
Yeah.
So I joined this movement. I was going there every day because they had free cookies. And I was a poor backpacker, you know, so if there was an opportunity to get a free meal, kind of free meal, you know. So I was going there and I listened to some talk about Bitcoin. I remembered there was a tent and Bitcoin logo, and unfortunately, I didn't get it at this time. That was very unfortunate and weird, because I was studying economics on a university. And I was really intrigued for trading as well, for markets. But no, this just flew around me. And only thing I really remember from this time is the Bitcoin logo and the cookies.
Yeah.
So then we came up to like a year 2017, 18, the big pump. And that's probably the time when it caught my attention for a second time. And I went through the usual journey of every Bitcoiner, I would say. I bought some Bitcoin, then I exchanged it for some better, more green, more fast Bitcoin, some shit coins. I lost it all. And this experience, when I touched the stove, really got me to the point where I consider myself Bitcoin maximalist now, And since that time, I was living abroad. I was living in Indonesia, and then COVID happened, actually. In 2020, I had to close my business and return after 6 years to Czech Republic. And already the year before COVID happened, I was always coming back to Czech Republic and talking to my brother. He's IT guy. He used to work in e-commerce, and we were talking about Bitcoin and saying like, okay, here is nothing, no big conferences, no not even meetups, maybe few meetups in Prague, in Paranopolis, but that's it. So we saw this opportunity, and we came up with the concept of Barcamp, which is very famous here in Czech, and it's like an open kind of conference, so everyone can speak. You just need to apply before. And this whole conference is very friendly. You usually serve beer since morning, so it gets very good friendly vibe. And we actually managed to throw the first one during the COVID in 2020 in September, only in very short period of 1 or 2 weeks time, when the restrictions were actually down, so people could meet outside. It was a crazy time because like you didn't know what will happen next week. Yeah, the restrictions were put on us in a style like, okay, people, tomorrow since midnight you cannot go outside. You know, it was crazy, like impossible to plan. But we were really lucky because, you know, how is it, like Satoshi was looking upon us. So we were really lucky. We threw the first conference in Ostrava, in our city, and we had 500 people there. That was the very beginning. And then the next year, we repeated and we doubled the attendees. So we had 1,000 people. Then the third year, we had to change a venue. So we found the biggest venue in our city. That was 2022. And we had already more than 2,000 people there, only in Czech language, Czech and Slovak. And there was the time where some people from abroad came, so from Germany, from Poland, more not like regular attendees, but like people who were really curious from the ecosystem. They had some companies, for example, and they kind of wanted to work with us and contribute and show their products in Czech. But we didn't want to mix the foreign language with Czech, because we kind of created this Barcamp vibe, which is very friendly, and it's kind of fitting to our Czech and Slovak nature. I like to say, and I'm a big Lord of the Rings fan, I like to say that we are a hobbits, you know, Czechs. We like our own environment, you know. We don't really think about the outside world. We like to drink our good beer, swear about our own politicians, you know, and
That sounds a bit like New Zealand, a little bit.
yeah, can be. And so we didn't want to jeopardize this, and so we decided that we will do actually one more conference, international, where we can like really invite everyone and materialize the big opportunities which were coming our way, and that's BTC Prague. So now we organize two conferences per year, both Bitcoin only, and that's BTC Prague in June, and September we have a ChainCamp conference, which is more deep and more geeky now. It kind of evolve into the like hardcore Bitcoin, Czech and Slovak Bitcoin OG gathering, something like Honey Badger in Riga, but only for Czechs and Slovaks.
That's incredible. And just speaking of the cultural thing there, you mentioned the hobbits, and I found out recently, and forgive my ignorance, but I found out Pilsner beer is like your national drink. And in Czech, you don't order a beer. You got to put your hand up and say, "I don't want a beer." Otherwise, they just assume you want one. Is that true? Is that sort of how it
Well,
works?
not yeah, it's kind of true, but not so much anymore. But it used to be like that you didn't ask for the beer
It just
and
comes.
they put it in front of you. Yeah.
Oh, no, that's cool. And it's interesting, the Wellington connection, and sort of being on the other side of the world. I've found maybe it's a little bit like New Zealanders, though we are, hobbits as well. You do find Kiwis and Czech people all over the world. Sort of some of them stay and then some of them go on the journey. And it's sort of the two sides of it. Certainly in my travels, it's sort of been a bit of that. So that's really cool though, man. Like how you've been able to bootstrap this, really huge and successful conference. And it looks like coming up the one in June this year could be your biggest one yet, potentially.
Yeah, we're planning to have 8, maybe 9,000 people
Oh, wow.
there. The venue is ready to welcome even more, but we don't want to be absolutely packed. Last year we had 6,500, and we know that we still have some reserves, so we are aiming for 8,000 this year.
Well, I guess coming back to Czech more generally, there is quite a few Bitcoin projects that have emerged. You've got obviously Brains and the mining side of things. You've got Trezor, that came up with the first hardware wallets, and there's a number of others. And so there's something about the situation in Czech that means that this sort of Bitcoin idea has really taken hold. And I did another episode with a friend who's also from Czech, living in New Zealand, and he shared, of course, Paralelní polis, the Institute of Crypto Anarchy, some of the sort of cultural projects and I guess the cultural awareness of what Bitcoin could mean. And I guess from your perspective, how do you see, I guess, Czech Slovak culture connecting with ideas of Bitcoin?
It's interesting, and most of the people really don't know that so many of great products, Bitcoin products and Bitcoin companies are coming from Prague. And I would say that the reason is historical, because we were under the communism oppression for a long time, and pretty much even before, Czechs were always fighting for freedom, and we were fighting really hard, using whichever tools gave us some bigger power, because we are a small nation. We never had really a chance to fight fair fight. So we need to find always some tools which will give us a like a special advantage. Yeah. And during last century, we were fighting for freedom maybe three times, and once we get it, we always lose it, So it was like after the World War II. Okay, we were very happy that we got away from Nazis, but the Russians came, and it was not much better. So very shorty eye, and because of this, Czechs developed quite craftsman culture. So people know how to take care about themselves, and I would say, and maybe I'm speaking from my own personality, but I would say I can kind of generalize this, that Czechs are don't like the authorities. Yeah, they don't respect the authorities too much. Yeah, it's like, okay, I know there is the law, but anyway, I'm gonna cross it. I don't give a fuck. And even the policemans, they are just like, ah, okay, it's like a small breaking the law. It's okay, they don't see it, So Czechs are like really like putting the middle finger and like kind of a libertarian thinking, I would say. Don't harm anyone else, be nice, be polite, but use your own brain. Yeah, we don't just follow blindly some laws which doesn't make sense. And I would say that this is the good base of for understanding Bitcoin, the critical thinking. Of course, we are nationalists, but not so much, I would say. That also helps a lot. And regarding Bitcoin, like being more specific. So I don't know if your friend told you, but it all started in Brno Lab in Prague, in a hacker space. where people from Brains, Satoshi Labs, Trezor, and General Bytes were meeting and were discussing Bitcoin, and they were finding solutions for their own problems. Yeah, so one of them, they wanted to do a better, storing their Bitcoin more securely. So they came up with Trezor. Yeah, Karel Kioski, he was developing the first Bitcoin ATM. Now General Bytes is the biggest manufacturer in the world. And guys from Brains, they just took over Slush Pool because Slush was really busy with the hardware wallet. And now the guys from Brains, they developed the first ever open source firmware for Bitcoin mining. So these guys are like really on the top of the game since the very beginning. And because you know how is it with Bitcoin, it takes time to understand it.
Yeah.
And if you are orange pilling someone, it usually takes a few years. But because we started in 2009, 2010, Czechs. So these guys started in 2009-10. So it gave the Czech community a lot of time to actually snowball into this. So now we are seeing the Bitcoin communities popping out in every city. We have regular meetups in maybe 10 or 15 cities. And you can pay for beer and food in 1,000 restaurants.
Wow. Yeah, that's really interesting. And I think you mentioned that kind of craftsman builder culture, which I think we see a little bit of that in New Zealand. It's sort of maybe a similar situation where you've got a small country, you know, it's in the case of New Zealand, it's an island in the middle of nowhere. And so people have to kind of come up with solutions. And it's not really super abundant until, as a New Zealander, you go overseas and you see that a lot of places you've got highly specialized, you know, jobs. You've got things that wouldn't even be a job in New Zealand. It would be a task that somebody does as part of their whole, you know, their whole work. But, you know, in larger countries, you've got that kind of division of labor. So it sort of leads to efficiencies in some regards, but it's also like you get people who sort of stay in their lane and they don't go outside of that. And I think that kind of dynamism where it's kind of like, well, if it's broken, you've got to fix it somehow. And there's no one to help you. You just got to do it yourself. That maybe is echoed with what's going on in Czech. And I guess the other thing I wanted to ask you about, so just locally, you've got the koruna, the Czech crown as your local currency, which is separate to the euro. And I wonder, just from a financial kind of monetary perspective, you talked about the Occupy movement that you attended in Wellington in 2011. Have you felt just the connections sort of from the monetary side of things, what's going on with the euro, the future move of the Czech Republic to using the euro potentially? Like, has that impacted kind of the Bitcoin story within your country, do you think?
Well, I'm not a good person to give really precise information on this topic. I don't feel I'm very well educated on this topic, and I don't follow news. I don't follow politics at all.
Yeah,
like I don't own TV. I don't read newspapers and newsletters. So, but I can tell you that they are trying to get euro to and shut out the Czech koruna, and it will probably happen. People are kind of blind. Still, the financial education is quite low, I would say. People don't see the implications and don't understand inflation. But regarding what was, I would say that now from Czech, that this doesn't have effect on Bitcoin. Most probably the biggest occasion or biggest historical fact what has had effect on Bitcoin was the financial crisis in Cyprus, when they shut the banks and took the money from people. That was a big aha moment, a light bulb moment for many people, because Cyprus was considered like a very safe place for financial freedom. And many people got to realize that their money are not safe anywhere. I think that was 2013 or 14.
Well, I mean, and I appreciate the there's no point watching the news or the media. They don't tell you anything. It's truth. And I fully understand that. But I guess I was surprised that you mentioned that you've got 1,000 merchants accepting Bitcoin, which is quite high. I think it's probably one of the highest per capita that I've seen. Certainly, places I've visited, it's not like that. And I wonder just whether there's a zeitgeist existing within Prague specifically, or more broadly in the country, that sort of makes people want to be part of this project. You know, do you find when you talk to just normal people, it's sort of they get it a bit quicker than in other countries, perhaps, or?
Well, it's a difficult question. Sometimes, yes. I think they tend to find it quite interesting quickly, especially the young ones. They are not afraid to try it. And I would say that because we have the kind of the freedom loving nature, and also we have quite a big libertarian community, Students for Liberty. That maybe helped the adoption as well. And regarding the pubs, these are just like a big steps because it wasn't like that until maybe 2 years ago. But there was a Bitcoiner working in a company named Qverko, and this company is has revolutionized the restaurant payment systems. So imagine you are sitting with your friends. You said that you had enough and you want to pay, but you don't want to wait for the waiter. So you scan a QR code, which is printed on the table, and you can split the bill. And each of you pay what you got, and you don't even need to see the waiter. So this is kind of a new thing in Czech, maybe for 4 years, but one of the lead developer is Bitcoiner, and he implemented Bitcoin payments into this payment
Wow.
system. So in every restaurant where is the Square Co application, you can pay with Bitcoin, you know. So it's not like a self-custody proper way of doing things. Most of the owners of this restaurant don't touch Bitcoin, yeah, because there is a middleman who do the exchange for it. But it works, you know, if you want to do it, and you pay with Lightning, so it's very private, so no one knows that you are in the pub paying for your beer.
That's really cool. And I mean, that speaks to the opportunity to deploy Bitcoin through these kind of traditional rails. So, and sort of the two sides can meet where you've got, you know, fully self-custodial, you know, Bitcoin is wanting Bitcoin, and then just normal people who have it as an option for their business or their point of sale, and that sort of thing. And those two things can converge. And it as part of that idea of normalizing Bitcoin, you just see it, you see the Bitcoin logo, it's just a payment option, it's available. And more people may start choosing to use it. And it's not this kind of unknown thing. Because I certainly think if you don't see it around, you might get the wrong impression. And if you watch too much television or you read the newspaper, you get told lies and you think, oh, I don't want to touch that. But actually, if you can just use it at the supermarket or to buy a beer or whatever, it really normalizes it in your daily life. So that's quite cool.
But that's the normal way for every technology, right? Like history tells us this, that like it used to be like when the cars were invented, there were some like draconian measures about cars because the cars were very loud and smelly, and horses, they didn't like it, you know. So the rider of the horse was the first citizen on the road, and the cars were the second, and you had to have a man who was running 30 or 50 meters in front of the car with the red flag and shouting, "Be careful, car is going, you know, you're crazy." So yeah, this is just like a transitionary phase of new technology, and it's so much fun to being here as an early adopter. But now I can kind of feel that we are turning from early adopters to or maybe late adopters to early majority. Because even people who are not really technical, they want to use it. And now with the ATFs, that's a big step into another direction. And also, which is the sign of the transition, is the culture shift. You can see now many artists and not only painters and people who do actually like material art, but also like singers, rappers, and poems are being created. And this is a clear sign that people finds this topic interesting, and they are talking about it not only because of the money, but also because of the philosophy.
Yeah, oh, I'm certainly seeing that as well. I think, you know, this new big idea, and certainly the pain that it is trying to address through the legacy financial system, through the debasement of fiat, that whole project, for people who aren't aware of that idea, you know, their life can just seem very difficult. You know, things are getting more and more expensive. It's hard to have a family, hard to buy a house, hard to do any of these things. But then you see that there are these solutions emerging, and there's actually a constellation of things. You know, it's not just Bitcoin, it's some of the stuff around Bitcoin, some of the privacy technology that people are using, and kind of I think of it's almost like a counterculture. Even though the counterculture idea has been hijacked in a way, it's sort of become very difficult to separate, you know, narratives. It's not just what the TV is saying and what it's not saying anymore. It's very confusing. But I certainly think, as a clear grassroots counterculture, Bitcoin is offering that. And your conference is a testament to that. You know, you've got 6,000, 7,000 people coming to learn about this, to be part of this thing that's happening, flying in from all over the world. And I mean, I guess when you started your thing in the bar talking about Bitcoin, like, did you think it would grow to be so big?
Not after the first one, but probably when we hit the second one, the 1,000 people, and we were sold out. We were selling tickets in the waves, and the waves were sold out in 2 minutes. So people were actually trading the tickets on the secondary market for like a double price.
Yeah.
And they were setting alarm because they knew that like you had to be like really ready and paid like as fast as possible. So we saw this, and we saw the huge opportunity, and we kind of and I want to stay humble, you know, don't want to sound arrogant in any way, but we knew that we will make it, you know. We really knew that. We were just looking for ways, because it's very difficult business. And we are very fortunate that we have these companies around us, and that's why that's a big advantage for us, because they are supporting us from the very beginning. And the base load of the people of the community makes the conference good. Yeah, if you have many people, it makes everything easier. The conferences are profitable only if they are big. And we are doing only conferences. That's our main occupation. We only organize conferences. We have a team of 7 people working full time the whole year.
Okay, wow, that's incredible. So you've got, and in terms of, I guess, the business side of things, you've got, I guess, some of the businesses you talked about before partnering with yourselves, or is it a sponsorship relationship? Like, can you talk to what it is that they're providing you, and I guess how you guys stand as an organization? What's sort of your role in that relationship?
What do you mean? Like, what are the contracts between us and our partners? Or
I guess what I'm saying, my question is, there has been challenges discussed with other conferences where there's say sponsorship, and there's kind of, what's the conference about? What's its core? As much as you're comfortable talking about it, like, what is your relationship with these other businesses that you're partnering with? And mm-hmm. are you like fully funded through ticket sales and these kinds of things? Mm-hmm. Or are you dependent on ongoing partnerships with these mm-hmm. companies? Like, how does that work?
Okay, I see where you're going with this. So my brother, he's a business development guy. He takes care about the partnership, so he would be probably more eloquent to talk about this. But it's regarding the revenue stream. It's pretty much like 60-40, I would say. 60% are coming from the ticket sales, and 40% are from partners. So we are dependent on both incomes. The partnership income is coming sooner, and the ticket sales is very, very last, because people tend to buy tickets on the very last moment. They speculate on the price of Bitcoin, which is probably a good thing, because the price of Bitcoin goes up more quickly than the price of our tickets. But regarding the relationship, maybe I can tell that we are very strict in choosing our partners. We and again, that's we have the advantage of being quite small and lean team. And our costs are not so big because we are in Czech. It's a cost-effective country. The venue is considerably cheap if I compare it with maybe US or pretty much any Western country. So this give us the advantage to choose our partners and make the costs of the conference quite cheap and attract more people. And we tend to be very conservative. So we don't allow any even slight bullshit on our conference, like anything with ordinals or Web3 or even slight blockchain thing. We don't like. We consider this as a noise, and we tend to say that we are filtering the noise. So why would we add something like this in our venue? That wouldn't make sense for us. So we rather take the slow approach, and build the business which has integrity, and which we will be proud about, because we don't want to again jeopardize and maybe ruin the reputation of whole Czech Bitcoin scene.
Yeah, no, that's cool. Thank you for answering that. I guess there just has been discussion recently as things get bigger and bigger, and as we come into perhaps the bull run and that sort of thing. You know, there's a lot more money floating around, and people sort of start getting into crazy things. And for example, if it's an event that is mainly sponsor driven, you eventually become sort of captured by that, and you have to be very careful about what you sort of are subscribed to and what you're dependent on. And it's really cool to sort of just, understand how you guys have done that. And I guess more broadly, what do you think really makes a successful conference? Like, what would you say makes BTC Prague tick? What makes it work? And what would you say are sort of some key learnings for like running a successful Bitcoin conference?
Okay, so what makes a good conference? I would say it's a combination of few factors. You need to have a good vibe. People tend to come, and we do a lot of surveys, so we feel that we know our customers quite well, and most of the people tell us that they are coming to meet others. They are not coming there to listen to talks. Of course, they listen to talks, and that's very important. And I encourage everyone to listen to talks, really, at least few, even though if you feel like you already know everything, you don't. So listen to talks, really. And after the talk, meet the speaker, greet them, ask them another question. They are very happy to talk to after the talk, after their presentation. So people are coming to meet others, and because most of them, they are just lonely, they are they are feeling the same thing me and you. Like we are swallowed by Bitcoin, by the hope for the future, and it's the philosophy around Bitcoin and the opportunity is so great. And sometimes if you cannot talk about it with others, it get depressing. So that's why Bitcoin meetups are very important. And let's say that you are maybe I will give an example. Let's say that you are a rock music fan. Yeah, so okay, you're listening rock every day, yeah, or while you're working, maybe in your headphones, while you're walking your dog, you really like the rock. But then, like one time per 2 months, you want to really go to the rock party, yeah, to the club with friends, drink some beer, and appreciate the good music. But one time per year, you go to the big festival like Nova Rock, where like 100,000 of people are dancing, and you just really feel the vibe and. And you are surrounded by people who like the same thing, and this gives you a very good feeling. And in a Bitcoin term, this gives you a conviction that Bitcoin is a real. Yeah, because we know that the rock music is real. Yeah, we know that it's established. But with Bitcoin, you might not feel like it's very real. You might have your doubts. But if you come to the Bitcoin conference and if you come to BTC Prague, you see few thousand people, you see 80 booths with Bitcoin-only companies, all of the companies which are on the forefront of this monetary revolution, they are there, they have their employees there. You can come on the booth, talk with the people, touch the service or product, use it. And this is just like absolutely amazing because after the conference, you have no doubts about Bitcoin and you can stack sats even harder. You don't need any more fiat on your bank account and you are very happy.
No, I mean it certainly it can be a lot different to some of the impersonal engagement you get even through some of the social media or just for engaging online. You don't quite get that human element, but I think as you say, meeting people in real life, and that's certainly been my experience. This podcast and a lot of my involvement more deeply in Bitcoin really came from some of the meetups in New Zealand, including one called BitKiwi, which is sort of around the same timeline, or maybe a little bit later, I guess. But after the New Zealand lockdowns went away, because we had them for a very long time, as you know, very difficult time. But after those went away, we started having these in-person BitKiwi meetups, which were organised actually starting in Wellington, which was really cool, and that brought a lot of people together from all over the country who had spent the last 3 years learning about Bitcoin as New Zealand turned into a dictatorship, and we'd never felt that before, because it was always a very safe kind of neutral country, very, very naive. And then we had, basically communism come in very quickly and take over with COVID. And then you had these Bitcoiners who had been through all of that coming together. And then all of these like businesses and ideas and relationships kind of spawned. And now it's really thriving, and I'm really excited for what that could mean. And so you've been able to do that. You've been able to facilitate that with BTC Prague at I guess, a more global scale. And it's sort of, you because it is, I mean, you say early majority. I think it's still very early, though, generally. You've got, out of all of the billions of people, you've got a few thousand coming together, but it's growing very quickly. And I think we're starting to see, like what would it take for normal people to just sort of be like, oh, okay. Is it Wall Street getting in? Is it the ETFs? Is it, Bitcoin number go up? Like at what point does it stop being new and exciting and it's just normal? Because I think that's probably sooner than we expect. It's just going to start being what people use to save money because their fiat doesn't work anymore. And I don't know, at what point did the internet just become normal? I don't know. It's kind of hard to put a date on these things, but I think it's soon.
I don't know because we have kind of technical problem with scaling now. So I'm very curious how the scaling will unfold because now we have no idea how to onboard more than 100 million people with with self-custody, even with one UTXO, like if you want to open the channel for Lightning. So I'm very hopeful for eCash tokens, for Fedimint. That's probably the most viable way from my point of view. And I'm not very technical, I need to say, but I tend to follow many other projects and talk to very smart people. That's my my advantage, that I have people from all over the world, from all the companies on the phone. And I always use the opportunity to ask this questions which are bugging me.
Yeah. No, I mean, just to be honest, I've been thinking about that as well. You know, Matias, like what scaling needs to be, what it needs to look like. And I think there's some paradigms around how you even look at that question, because in the old days there was that question as well. You know, how do we scale? And it led to some knee jerk sort of reactions. I think what we'll find is that solutions will emerge naturally in the free market as they are. And you talk about eCash and Fedimint and these things. And I certainly think that is a much more appropriate hierarchy of options, where you've always got pristine on-chain transactions, then you've got layer twos, you've got these other federated solutions. But it maps a lot more onto the hierarchy that is necessary for a global financial system. Mm-hmm. And I went to a small presentation with some guys working on Fedimint and hearing about what they're working on, you know, looking at some of the other things that are emerging. So I think there will be a very interesting time over the next couple of years as that starts to happen. But I think the solution and the scaling challenge itself will kind of emerge together, and it's only going to be through like conversation and proof of work, people coming together and actually talking about the solution, how it could work, how it may not work. It sort of feeds back on itself, because we can never design a perfect thing. You know, it's never just going to emerge. It's going to take challenges. Mm-hmm. You know, people try to scale it, maybe it doesn't work, they're going to try and scale it another way, but it will just sort of, yeah, I think it will just build itself as things go on.
I wouldn't say that it will build itself. I think there will need to be some very hard decision to be made in upcoming years, and I'm curious about it. Yeah,
it's exciting though. Like
it is.
It does though come back to a question around culture as well. And you talked about the vibes, and I know what you mean. It's hard to quantify vibes, but you know, the curious, the intellectual, the truth-seeking nature of a group of people coming together and being like, okay, how can we fix this? How can we, mm-hmm. and maybe not how can we fix this, but how can we build this? Mm-hmm. There's an energy to that, a very positive kind of feeling that doesn't really come out in other places, that can get highly politicized. And mm-hmm. so it comes back to like, what are the principles that you're approaching the problem with? And I think it's important to have that real world connection. So, you know, things like the conferences, these kind of events where you can recalibrate, you know, what you're doing, because if you're only on social media, you're only on the mailing lists, you're only on the forums, it can get very cliquey, very knee-jerky, very kind of memes, you know, like
mm-hmm.
we don't want to change anything. We're just going to go into our shell. But when you meet people in real life and you hear what they're working on and you see their passion for it and why they think it's the case, maybe you have a beer, you talk for a couple of hours, and you'd be like, oh, okay, I understand now what you're talking about. And I've actually got some thoughts on that, and you can share that. And so in a way, going offline, making it real, mm-hmm. actually helps, would you say, perhaps?
Yeah, definitely. No, the meat space is very important to actually find the truth for yourself.
Mm.
And especially now in the AI age, when you cannot be sure about anything what you see on the internet. So I really believe that the meeting people in the real world and creating the baseline of trust, the anchors of trust for the future, it's very, very important. Once you meet someone in person, that changes everything. Yeah, we met in person in Tokyo, and that's why we are now talking. Yeah, otherwise we would never connect. So going to conferences, it's super important.
Yeah.
I was traveling to 12 conferences last year, and Tokyo was the last one. It was exhausting for me, but definitely worth going around the globe.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you say you can't trust anything on the internet, but I think in a way, I mean, that is true. And I think the only thing you can trust actually is your what's on your Bitcoin node. And then by virtue of people who trust their own Bitcoin nodes, you can trust that they're trusting something. They have a reference for truth. And so you can then have a conversation with them. And I have this deep belief that culturally that's how we rebuild civil society, is people coming back to like there is a frame of reference. We know something. We don't know. There's a lot of things we don't know, but the one thing we do know is what our Bitcoin node says. And then, you meet the people who think like that, and then those people become the new builders of this kind of new civil world. Because at the moment, man, you're lucky you don't have a TV, because none of that stuff is anywhere close to what I would consider to be truthful. It's just noise. It's only going to get worse as well with AI
It's not
stuff.
even noise. It's disgusting.
Yeah,
It's
actually, not
disgusting. It's
noise can be
it's it.
relaxing to listen to. It's
Yeah.
like a
No, it's dirty. It's just lies and manipulation. It's disgusting, really.
But hey, look, just coming back to the conference. So, people, there's still time to obviously get tickets. We're still a little while off from that. I'm excited. It's going to be actually my first trip to the old world. I've never been to Europe before, so I'm
Okay,
so.
well, you choose very well. That's Prague is beautiful. It's very, very historical city.
Yeah, no, it's always interesting. I tell people, I'm sort of, from Asia Pacific, it's a very different kind of context. And coming to Europe, and I'm hopefully going to try and plan a few other things, around those dates. I'm just looking at my options. But if people want to sort of learn more in terms of the options for the conference, and I know there's another event immediately prior to the conference as well with the Dev Hack Day.
Dev Hack Day,
Yeah, so
correct.
tell me a little bit more just around the conference offerings, the dates, what people can expect, who the talkers are, these kind of things.
Okay. I will try to quickly summarize it. So the
Please.
conference is 4 day long, the whole conference. But the first day, that's Wednesday, 12th of June, it's a Dev Hack Day. That's only for 500 people. And it's a kind of a small conference, but very technical. So for developers, like half of the people will be just Bitcoin developers, and we sell the second half of this amount. So we sell like 300 tickets, and you can expect to see most of the people who actually build stuff in Bitcoin ecosystem there. And this is for people who like really go deep into the technical details, but not you don't have to be deaf to go to this conference. You just need to have like a general understanding of the technology. And the advantage or the edge, what we are trying to get here is first the networking. So meet the devs, have a chance to talk to them. And see the future, see what is being built behind the curtains, what might be actually active next year or the year after. For example, BitVM, very exciting things. What is not fitting for the main stage? So we give space on this Dev Hack Day because it's very niche topic. Yeah. So there's a Wednesday, then Thursday, it's Industry Day, and that's already in the main venue. And it's a day for people. I would say this is the best value because if you are interested in Bitcoin and you really want to talk to other and do the very important networking, we sell only 1,000 tickets for this Industry Day. That means that the venue is actually quite empty. But all the companies are already there, the booths are there, the people from these companies are waiting for you to come to the booth and talk to them. So you have all day without the retail, without the buzz of the normies who are just like asking the basic questions. You have the opportunity to really speak to everyone and do the meet and greet, shake the hand, kind of style, what is very, very important to do on the first day, because then you just can decide where you want to focus your time and energy for Friday and Saturday. So that's industry day, Thursday. Then we have two general admission days. These are Friday and Saturday, and that's already with the retail, with the mass. So you can expect 6, 7, 8 thousand people there. We have we have four stages. It's main stage, expo stage, check stage, and VIP stage. So if you look on the internet, you can see which ticket gets you to which stage. But I would probably maybe shell a little bit the VIP stage for those who really want to make a great connection. This is absolutely unprecedented opportunity, because in the VIP stage we pick only the best speakers, like Adam Beck, for example, who will go on the VIP stage is without recording, and it's very intimate. So the Q&A, you can ask a question, and this way break the ice. And last year we had this as well, and we saw that after the Q&A session officially ended, the people actually create a circle right next to the stage and continue talking while having a beer or a coffee for another 2 hours. So this way we bring the people even more close, and give you the opportunity to actually start a conversation with the very high profile people in the space.
Yeah, that's incredible. Yeah, I think I grabbed an industry pass, so I'm looking forward to that. I didn't realize it was limited to 1,000 people, so that's really cool. It sort of gives you a lot more time to go and talk to people, talk to the businesses, find out what's going on without the busload of normies, as you say. But still, the rest of the weekend could the other 2 days would be really cool as well. And then I guess more broadly, this time of year in Prague, like what can people expect? I guess it's going to be coming early summer. It's going to be hot. Like what sort of, I mean, there's other stuff in the city. Like what do you recommend?
It is a summertime already, so you can expect nice warm weather, wearing shorts and t-shirts, maybe a hoodie in the evening. The venue is set for party. So if you want to go to the city, you can. But actually, because we know that Bitcoiners like to spend most of the time just with another Bitcoiners, so you come at the 9 a.m. for a beginning of the conference, and you finish in the midnight
Okay.
every day, and the Saturday party goes until morning. So if you want to party until 4 or 5 a.m., that's normal in Czech, and we are prepared for that.
Oh, that's awesome. It's funny when we've had the BitKiwi meetups in New Zealand, I say to friends, you know, it starts maybe earlier in the day and it goes through until the evening. And they think, man, what are you guys doing? And I just say, well, we're just talking about Bitcoin the whole time. And it's hard for normal people to understand that. But it really, as you say, this revolution, this new idea, this new monetary technology, there is a lot to talk about. And it's very exciting. But hey, Matias, I appreciate your time. And I look forward to seeing you again, actually, if we do get a chance to bump into each other in Prague.
Definitely.
Yeah, I look forward to exploring the old city. It's got a lot of history, and I'm very interested in literature and the kind of cultural, artistic history as well of the city. So it should be a great trip.
Yeah, there is so much stuff to see. So, for your community, for your listeners, if you come to Prague, make sure that you spend maybe a week, at least a week, like in addition to this conference in Prague, because it's beautiful, and you won't see that in many places in the world. The Gothic old city, it's really something to just wander without a map, you know, just get lost in the city and look around.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Great to talk to you.
Thank you for listening. I do hope you enjoyed the show. I am Cody Allingham, and that was the Transformation of Value. If you would like to get in touch, please send me an email at hello@thetransformationofvalue.com, and I will get back to you.